Welcome to Nice Ashes. I'm Mike.
And I'm Nate. I was supposed to do the intro, I thought, but whatever. We're smoking.
That's what you fucking said. Hey, that's what you fucking said. And then you said, no. Go, Mike, go. And I was like, all right, well, I'll take the intro.
I don't know what's going on.
Yeah,
this is
you're the one that's
to,
running the show.
You know
show.
What? No. No. You
yeah,
know what?
Yeah.
Everybody listening, welcome to Nice Ashes, the fucking fight. This is what we're doing this whole episode.
Fight, 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 fight.
It's a fight episode. Welcome to it. Get ready for some real shit. Mike's going to ask
I
you what cigar we're smoking.
Guy's name Nate.
And I'm going to tell him bowling sucks. It's just not fun.
No, bowling
I like
is
bowling
trash.
Fine. We're smoking the Alec Bradley Project 40, which is an experimental series. I hope to God it's good because the Aaron Gobrach was not.
Oh, that was pure misery. And I'm actually really looking forward to this because Alec Bradley does do these experimental cigars. And it's maybe not available now, but their new project will be, and it should be indicative of what they're doing. So I'm pretty
yes.
excited.
You know, I'm excited about this one. It looks good. I like their label design. I like the little extra experimental series label.
Oh, yeah.
It feels good in the hand. Feels good in the hand. So we build this as Nice Ashes the Fight. And I don't think it's so much going to be a fight other than a pretty heated discussion. But before we get to that, the first few puffs of this cigar, there's some spice on this one. First few puffs are good, kind of as to be expected from an Alec Bradley.
I'll be honest with you, I expect a great cigar. The smell of the stick before it was lit was kind of agricultural, let's call it that. I thought it smelled a little grass-like.
Yeah. Sure. It is experimental after all. Who knows what they're putting in these things these days.
After a few puffs, this has some spice.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I think
100%.
This is going to be
it does.
Wonderful.
I'm pretty excited. So far, it's been pretty good. And that's like maybe 8 puffs in.
Yeah, it's a good start. It starts off strong. Let's put it that way.
Yes. We're going to, and I'm not going to banty about. We're not doing any clickbait bullshit. We're talking Dune Machine Crusade, which is the second book in Brian Herbert and Kevin J. Anderson's Dune prequel trilogy. We previously did the Butlerian Jihad, which I was not a fan of at all. It was so bad that had we not already said we're going to do the entire trilogy on the podcast, I would not have read the second book. That's how bad the first one was. I simply would not have done it.
Yes. Also, Nate, you forgot. What are you pairing your cigar with?
Oh, yes. Vim and Vinegar, Hatred for Machines and Humans, and Sierra Nevada Torpedo Extra IPA. I did not go and get a 12-pack before recording several episodes in one night.
I am going back to Old Faithful, got some Guinness. I know it's shocking to everybody.
Oh, no. Mike likes bowling and Guinness.
Well, when it goes on sale at Costco, I buy a pickup.
Hey, man.
That's all I can say.
I love me some Guinness. And Mike and I are going to see each other tomorrow. And goddamn, we're going to drink some Guinness because that's what I got. Even though he said he was fine with anything else. But Mike gets what Mike wants a lot of times.
Yeah, hard to say no to the to the Guinness for sure.
Yes. Now, I'm going to do a first on the show, and I probably should have done this a long time ago. I got a little tablet, and I've got my notes for the book on this tablet. And so I'm dual screening it here on the show. Normally, I would pull up my notes on the computer, but I figured I've got this tablet just sitting here. I might as well use it and whatnot. So not
important. I've been
doing
the dual laptop the last several episodes, because since we got our new laptop, I've been using that for the show, and then my old laptop I use for my notes.
Sure. So I guess, like, before we get into notes and shit, let's give a rundown of this book. This is the second book in a trilogy that takes place these fucking years, man. Like, it was, what, 10,000 years before the events of Dune?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, some bullshit. So this book picks up, I think, there's a 25 or 26-year jump between the first book and the second book.
Yes.
And the Machine Crusade, or the Jihad, or whatever, what have you, is still going on. You've got the same people. You've got Xavier Harkonnen. You've got Vorian Atreides. You've got Serena Butler.
Iblis Gimjo.
Yeah, Iblis Gimjo. You've got, and we'll talk about more of the characters as we go through. You've got Salim in here, the kind of accused, incorrectly accused, wrongfully accused water thief on Arrakis. And, you know, Tia Holtzman, Norma Senva, her kind of bee of a mom who finds redemption in this story, incidentally. And Aurelius Venport.
Yep, Jewel Narette.
Jewel Narette. And this is kind of the continued fights of things. You've, of course, got Omnius and Erasmus. Aramis, whatever the fuck.
Erasmus. Erasmus. I believe is how it's pronounced. But,
you've yeah. got some of the Titans fucking around.
Agamemnon. Yeah. And Xerxes, Agamemnon, Juno. Yep,
Xerxes, Juno. Hecate makes an appearance.
Gilbertus Albans.
Yes. Yeah. Fucking weird ass guy. So I don't know how much of the plot, like the plot will come as we go through the notes, because what happened is I read the book and every time I was like, oh, I want to talk about this, I put it in the notes. And so I've got the book. My notes are in chronological order in terms of the book. So do you have anything you want to add about the book before I get into my notes? And then you can refute everything I say and tell me how awesome the book was.
Well, I want to start because I know how this is going to go.
Do you?
Yes, I do.
You took a dose of Melange, you took a spice wafer, and you've seen it in the future?
I did. I have some prescient vision. And Nate is going to criticize this because it's not literarily, it is not Dune. It's not the perfection that is Dune. Dune is
pretty fantastic.
Frank Herbert and Dune, in the first six books especially, where he was the sole author.
Yes.
Those are some special works of fiction, similar to Lord of the Rings or Harry Potter.
Yes.
It's a notch above everything. And the stuff that Brian Herbert and Kevin Anderson does is a lot more along the lines of pulp fiction and pulp science fiction. So
yeah.
It's much more in line with like the John Carter, Tarzan, Conan the Barbarian style. Sci-fi.
Yeah.
And that's definitely an acquired taste and a mindset. So I like pulp sci-fi from the 30s, despite its shortcomings. And this has a lot of elements of that, where it's like, insert blatant sexist thing here, or insert blatant racist thing here. And it's like kind of a whimsical tale.
Whimsical and I'm history lesson.
Yeah, a whimsical tale. And I think that's fine. I'm okay with that.
I think my problem is coming from Dune. And even the three books that Brian and Kevin finished on behalf of Frank, I liked. I enjoyed. And it made me wish that I stopped and read these before reading their books, you know. And I will say, just up front, the first 400 pages of this book, I was less than thrilled. And they finally got a hook in around the 400 mark of the 700-page book, right? So I liked this one much better than The Butlerian Jihad. Of course, I still have issues, right? But overall, my feeling towards this book is a lot more positive than Butlerian Jihad,
which I'm not sure if
that's what you're expecting or not, Mike.
I you know what? I knew that it wasn't going to be all positive. That's for sure.
Yeah, well, it's not going to be because, man, well, I have issues. But
passive-aggressively texting me hate messages. I mean, warnings. I mean, yeah.
Where the fuck am I reading this, Mike?
You're like, thank God for the show. Otherwise, I'd burn him these books.
No, I am not a 1930s German. Yeah. This is going right in the bonfire next to my copy of Mein Kampf.
I'm a lot more forgiving with that because I do like trashy sci-fi. And this is much more in the line of trashy sci-fi than it is with legitimate literature that is also sci-fi simultaneously.
Yeah, and I like the trashy sci-fi as well if it's older, because then it makes it okay. But I don't want, like, man, your dad wrote this fantastic sci-fi series, and now I'm reading a prequel trilogy, and all this stuff seems stupid. Not all of it, right? Not all of it, but like a lot of this stuff seems stupid. And we even mentioned it when we talked about Butlerian Jihad, when you were like, well, just coincidentally, all of the major players in the history of the Dune books happen to live at the same time and are doing things at the same time and interacting with everybody, you know? And it's like, yeah, that's kind of fucking weird, you know? Like, even in the, dude, the founding fathers of, so of America weren't all, like, friends or interacted with each other, you know? Like,
yeah, Frederick Douglass wasn't going on pleasure cruises with Abraham Lincoln, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Friend of
the show, Frederick Douglass. We'll get him on here soon. Yeah, and it's interesting because, and it's tough because you set these things, and even, and Frank did this too with God Emperor of Dune, where he's like, hey, let's just leap ahead 4,000 years or whatever it was, right? And, you know, if you're thinking about it in a super scientific way, which we shouldn't really be, this is fiction, this is supposed to be fun, but, you know, it's like, okay, so the beginning of Dune, this prequel trilogy here is 10,000 years before Dune actually starts. And then the Dune series actually runs for, what, 10 or 25,000 years? And so then you start thinking about, like, linguistic drift and things. And the only thing that's changed in the entire 35,000 or 40,000 years of the Dune universe is sometimes, check this out, sometimes they call Dune Arrakis. And other times they call it Rakis. And then sometimes they call it Dune. And that's the only linguistic drift in the entire 40,000 years, like, written history of Dune. So,
well, they don't have any computer algorithms to push change, man. I mean, clearly Middle English is different than Modern English because of the advent of the computer
and of AI
1300. Yeah, AI back in 1300.
Yeah, William Shakespeare. Yeah, but, like, you know, like the issue is that Frank did such a good job with the I'm struggling for the word now, but, like, you know, with the Fremen and the different factions, he did such a good job with all that stuff that these kind of huge time leaps are more so in this prequel trilogy. They're a little more problematic for me. They felt more organic in the original, like, 8-book series that, you know, Brian and Kevin finished. It felt more organic, but I think they were going heavily off of his notes.
They were, and that's why they were finished, is because Frank Herbert had extensive notes to finish out the series. So,
but yes. I'm gonna get into my notes here, and we're gonna talk about this, much to Mike's chagrin. The first few notes here, kind of like just little, like, peddly things. So, like, Iblis is reading off of this tablet or runestone that he translates for the council, but I didn't even know what the fuck he was talking about. And later it was kind of it was explained it was a musings of a cogitor. Right, and he was, like, misinterpreting or purposely twisting the writings, because he later in the book goes on and speaks with this cogitor, and they're like, "The fuck are you talking about? Like, that's not what I said." And he's like, "Oh no, it is, and tell me more, so I can twist these words and control the masses," because he's like a giant asshole.
Oh, he's a piece of shit for sure, and he'll get even worse later in the story.
Don't I know?
I don't know.
I finished
the book. Serena Butler.
And all that. Butler. Well, you can't anymore, but we'll get to that later. You know, but, like, on one hand, he's terrible. But on the other hand, he was exactly what the movement needed.
Oh, for sure. You need a charismatic leader.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, like, I can't be all angry at Brian and Kevin, right? But it was weird because it kind of, like, started out and he's, like, reading this tablet and you're kind of like, well, we jumped 25 years and now he's reading this tablet, and where did this tablet come from and what the fuck is he talking about? And I don't know what's going on. And then it's funny because it seems like they take constructive criticism, but then they put it in their book and just, like, brush past it. So the next thing I wrote was, Omnia suggests stopping the war with humans and only living on the uninhabitable planets that humans can't live on. And he's like, he's talking to Erasmus about this. He's like, hey, we could just, like, stop this war and just go live on planets that humans can't live on.
Which is the solution, the obvious
solution. And I'm like, oh, well, that seems really interesting. And then, like, the next chapter happens and they never come back to that thought. Like, there was no actual closure of that discussion in that chapter. And we just move on from it. And we're fighting still again. So whatever, I guess.
Yeah, they dropped the ball on that.
I feel like that's where I want, like, the Frank Huber kind of, like, level of detail, where Frank would have taken this story, like, I swear to God, Frank would have taken this story and made maybe a book out of it, or, like, 2 books tops. And here we have, like, 3 700-page books, and it's too much, I think. They got a little, like, verbose. So the next one is just a joke. It's a joke. Vor calls Xavier a hard man, and Xavier responds, verbatim, "Serena's jihad has made me one." but he must have meant Serena's sister has made him one. Gotta love that Okta, 16-year-old. Okay. All right, here's this next one, and this is the one I have the biggest problem with, and I get back to it because it comes back later, a similar thread. So there's a chapter where the machines are setting up the morning's offensives. They're waiting until morning to launch their offensive? If they, like, can't they do around-the-clock offensives? They can't just keep going?
The machines, like, if they don't act like machines, for sure.
Right?
It's,
I know.
Very
if they would have just said, like, hey, humans need sleep and food and stuff. Like, if we just launch, let's say for like 18 days, like how long can a human go without water or sleep? Let's, like, 30 days. Okay, let's just do 30 days, 3 weeks, whatever. 30 days. We'll just go 30 days nonstop, 24/7 on them. That'd be the end of it. It'd be done. It'd be over. There'd be no way. Like, that's it. Jihad won or whatever, right?
It was mentioned also, I can't remember if it was this one or the previous one. Why don't we just get rid of all the humans? I think it was this book. Like, why don't we just get rid of all the humans? Like, stop fucking with humans at all.
No, yeah, yeah.
Only
yeah,
machines
they said,
do
so why don't
everything.
We just, yeah. Why don't we just go live on uninhabited planets? Why don't we just have machines do everything? And that's the other thing is, like, why even have humans slaves? It doesn't even fucking matter. Like,
yeah,
it's
why,
like, it's
why,
like,
why maintain a human slave force at all? It doesn't make any sense. Like,
just so
that's
it
not
doesn't
efficient.
Make sense at all. Like, what? So Erasmus can do his weird little fucking tests? That's certainly not important if your goal is to obliterate all humans. And why wait for the morning? Oh, we have to wait for the humans to wake up so we can fight them. Well, you sound like you're fighting fucking World War I. Like, we can't fight at night. We're going to pause for Christmas and celebrate with each other. Yeah,
right.
That's great.
Even
WWE 2, but a machine wouldn't give
a
shit.
They were doing night offensives.
You know?
Like,
yeah.
Normandy started at night, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Just stay
well, and it's like, and that's all nice and everything, but machines wouldn't give two fucks about that. They'd be like, oh, what's the most effective way to obliterate all humans? Oh, humans have to sleep. So if we can attack them for 18 days, we will win because they will all die of lack of sleep.
Right. Machines don't need light to see. That's for sure.
No. And they don't need rest or food or anything else. So it doesn't even make any sense. I wrote this down because it was a kind of a weird thing where they mentioned Virgil as the young black officer, but then I don't remember who Virgil was or why he was important because he died shortly thereafter, I think.
Virgil Tantor was the
stepbrother to Xavier. But then he died and Xavier was all bitchy about that too. Fuck, what isn't that guy bitchy about? And then we had two chapters of Jewel. Bemoaning the advanced chip he installed in the fighting mech trainer because it killed his fucking, like, surrogate father. So there's two chapters of him just bitching about, oh, I shouldn't have put that chip in there.
Yeah, they totally got sidetracked on that so that it plays into the future Duncan Idaho story.
Oh,
it serves
okay.
no practical purpose for
this
narration, right?
Well, and it's interesting because, you know, of course, they've had the entire knowledge of the main Dune timeline. So they're trying to set everything up and set everything up to where it doesn't, it, like, it's almost too coincidental.
It's a pretty clean package, a little too clean, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And then I wrote down here, it takes Serena 214 pages to decide to actually fucking do something and get out of the City of Introspection because she's been, like, weeping in there, or I don't know what the fuck she's been doing in there. Fighting her inner demons in the City of Introspection, much like her mother did. Like, her mother, like, retreated to the City of Introspection in the first book, but was still married to Mannion, her dad, and I guess they made that work, but my God, she wasn't part of much.
Right. It's definitely, it's weird. Really weird. How are you supposed to be leading this jihad when you live in a monk city?
Yeah, and they kind of made a big point of that where, like, that's how Iblis was able to rise to such heights, and then he actually got butt hurt when she wanted to do something. He's like, oh fuck, she's gonna come wreck my sweet gig I got going for myself here.
Right.
But in the end, he needed her to keep things going. All right, this is kind of maybe my biggest part of the whole machine crusade jihad. This is maybe my biggest sticking point outside of, like, why wouldn't the machines just fucking, you know, go rock hard for, you know, 30 days? Like, honestly, it couldn't take more than 30, maybe 40 days if they just launched an onslaught. Like, they can build infinite number of machines. Just build all those fucking machines, launch them for 40 days straight, and you've won. Anyway, I'm no tactician, but that's what I would have done. Okay, so here's my next thought is an abacus. An abacus is not a machine. That was, like, the height for a long time of mathematics, right? The abacus. And glow globes, I guess, aren't machines. Shield generators aren't thinking machines. If all those things aren't machines, a calculator also cannot be a machine. Like you could have a straight up like scientific graphing calculator, and that's not a machine. So why do they have all these fucking slaves running formulas? You have to teach them math, and then you have to assume, much to T.O. Holtzman's dismay in the first book, to not sabotage or put commas in the wrong places or decimal points in the wrong places. Like, wouldn't you, like, just a calculator. Like, that can't possibly be a thinking machine.
They definitely didn't have the foresight to understand the level of computing, complex computing that we have today that does not involve, quote-unquote, thinking machine.
Yeah. Right?
Like, you can do some pretty complex calculations and complex processes without any level of AI at all.
Man, okay, so this was copyright in 2003. I shit you not. I got the book right here, 2003. You're telling me 2003 they don't know a calculator's not a thinking machine? I don't think that's accurate.
I think they're trying to keep in the spirit of Dune, which was written in 1967.
I think that's pretty dumb.
Lazy? Yes, for sure. Am I the one who's criticizing, or are you the one who's criticizing? That's the real question.
Well, I'm just, you know, like,
because I like this book.
Overall, I enjoyed the book. It, you know, I have issues that I didn't actually take notes on, and we'll talk about kind of later. But those are kind of my biggest gripes. I've got a whole list of them here, you know. But, you know, like an abacus, there's zero computer components to that. And you're telling me that if you have to use like pen and paper to double check all of your slaves' work, which T.O. Holtzman is too lazy to do, which is why he got into all the trouble he got into, you can't use like an abacus or like even a basic calculator. Like you don't need all of this fancy stuff and AI and actual
things. Why do you have all these slaves putting shit together when you could have machines do it that are just
mechanical. Like a bobcat,
like a mechanical machine.
Yeah, like a bobcat isn't, or a crane. Like they're not
right. Yeah, yeah. These guys are doing shit like they do in India, where you have like 100 guys shoveling sand out the back of a truck with fucking number two shovels.
Yeah, yeah.
When you could just put a jack in there and literally just dump all the sand out. Like, this is the kind of shit they're describing being done.
I know, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Why are
because,
we doing this?
Because they hate machines. Like, all machines.
Yeah.
We don't like any machines except glow globes and suspensor
platforms.
They hate
hydraulics. Like,
yeah.
Well, what? Like, what? What are you doing?
I would have liked a little bit more consistency because it's like, even in Dune, there's no thinking machines. You've got the Mentats, right? And you've got the Guild Navigators. And they function as computers, but they certainly have suspensor platforms and ground cars and everything else. So it's like, let's just sit down and figure out what is and isn't a machine here. Like, let's just...
Right, you know, like a fucking crane is not...
Draw your line in the sand and let's figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. Modern building sites don't have machines that think. But machines do almost all the work to construct a big building.
Yeah.
And of course they do.
Well, yeah, they have to. Okay, so the next thing I thought was, so Norma is working on her fold space engines. They mention several times that current space travel is slow, which is why Norma is so excited about her fold space engines. So Xavier and Vor, they have all this time to like rest when they're battling on Portron and Ix and all these other planets. Wouldn't they spend all their time like either fighting or traveling? Like they've got all this time to like go back and visit like Octa, and Vor has time to go visit the Lusitania or whatever.
His lady on Caladan.
Laronica.
Coincidentally. Yeah. She happens to be on Caladan.
The Atreides home planet.
In the town where the fucking castle was built 30,000 years later or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, like, can the machines travel faster? Or is there just, like, all this excess time? Like, is most of the time skips because they were traveling in space? Like, hey, this book takes 26 years later from the first book, space travel. They're just traveling around in space. Like, I don't know how far
if you look
away
at
these
Xavier's children
are.
They like go from being babies to being
They're all like fucking 60 by the end of this book. Not
right.
His kids,
yeah,
but like
exactly.
Him and like Vor and everything. And my next one was they have all these shrines to Manny and the Innocent, and there's a big like supposedly shocking reveal at the end of this book where it was not even really Manny's preserved body, but some kind of, you know, like I don't know, paper mache, whatever. And Xavier's like, "What? That's not my son." And Serena's like, "I've known for some time, and it's helped like keep people excited about fighting." And he's like, "Well, I guess it's okay." But it's like, that's fucking stupid. Okay, so they've got all these shrines to Man the Innocent, all these different planets, right? But what, none of those survived the main Dune timeline? Like, there was never any mention anywhere of a Man in the Innocent in the main Dune timeline. They talked about the Butler and Jihad, but they never talked about, like, Man in the Innocent, who's supposedly, like, the rallying cry of
Wow,
Jihad.
He's a new creation for the series. You know?
I understand that.
They
got to
come up with new ideas, man.
Well, tying everything ever mentioned in the original books into this three-book series. We've got new ideas, I promise. Man in the Innocent. Also, everybody you've ever heard of, ever, is in these three books. So buy them now.
Yeah, every group all summed up right here. Yep. Nothing new. Nothing new for 10,000 years.
This next one is a little bit of doublespeak or fancy thinking, right? So the Jihad is raging for over 25 years. I think 26 years by the time this chapter happens. Xavier is rushing home for his 46-year-old wife to give birth. But he wasn't at the other two kids' births. Octa's choosing to give birth at home, and the reason the book mentions is to keep the medical centers open for the soldiers who need medical care. But the main guy leading this fucking jihad, Xavier, main battle guy, right, can leave the battle to come home for this, you know, super important, like, third birth. But the fighting's so bad that Octa can't go to the hospital. So which one is it? Is the fighting not bad enough that Xavier can go home? Or is it so bad that Octa can't go to the hospital? Like, you got to pick one. Like, it can't be both.
I have nothing to say. I mean, a lot of this reminds me of the John Carter series where there's glaring plot holes and you just gotta just let it go.
No,
just
I
let it go
that.
For the fun.
And I'm being purposefully picky. Purposefully picky.
Well, so when you're following up the legacy of Dune and Frank Herbert.
Yeah, you're following up the legacy. And don't get me wrong, I enjoyed this book. I did not enjoy the first one. I enjoyed this one. This one was fine. That doesn't mean there weren't issues, but again, I'm being almost needlessly picky because we promised you Nice Ashes the Fight, and here we are. You'll like this one, Mike, maybe. Erasmus says they can't defeat the humans without understanding the humans. And to that, my response is, what? Launch a nonstop attack. Humans need sleep. That's pretty much all you need to know. They need sleep. They need food. They need water. If you can cut those things off, they will fucking die. And you will win.
Erasmus as a villain is, like, so lazy because he is so evil.
Yeah.
And
he is terribly evil, but he's kind of like the hero evil. At the end of the first of the main series.
Oh, for sure. And, well, he was a hero again later. Which we'll never get there, so we can talk about it anyway. But he's the one that did all the Mentat training, because he wanted to train humans to become thinking machines so that thinking machines could be eliminated, because he became suddenly pro-human at some point.
Yeah.
You know, through the magic of sci-fi.
Well, the magic of having your own, he's an independent robot. He's got his own conscious and everything like that.
Exactly. But yeah, I mean, Erasmus is like, it's almost like they didn't just go to the independent worlds that were not habitable to humans because Erasmus wanted to torture humans.
Had a whole chapter in the very beginning of the book where Omnius is like, should we just do that? And then they went to the next chapter and never went back to revisit that. And you're like, what was the outcome of that conversation? It was just like pondering.
Yeah, Erasmus and the Titans want to torture people. And it's like, well, isn't Omnius the fucking one who's in charge?
Yeah.
Like, not the Titans. Who gives a shit about the Titans? No, why didn't Omnius tell, hey, Titans, go and do your own thing. I don't care. Just don't mess with me. Leave. Go away. Don't want anything to do with you. And they're idiots. Titans, who have been alive for 1,000 years, are dumb. They make stupid decisions.
Yeah.
It's crazy how stupid they are.
Yeah. And, like, Agamemnon is like, oh, I'm the greatest general that ever lived. And it's like, you're fucking stupid, dude. Like, you don't know what's going on.
Cigar check.
Yeah, I'm a little halfway. Over halfway. Yeah, I like this
I
one.
Like
this
it.
This one's good.
Very spicy.
Yes.
Very spicy.
It's still spicy.
Not
a lot of times that spice dissipates.
Dark. No, yeah, it does. And that's not. This is pepper.
Not the case.
A lot of pepper.
Yes.
I like it.
Same.
Yeah, not smooth at all. Very spicy, but
very spicy.
I
like it as well. I've got another note here where they've got surveillance and communication satellites. And I'm like, okay, so they've got these. Then Norma's having to teach like mental math to slaves. So you've got satellites, but Norma has to teach mental math to slaves because a calculator is too high tech.
I have a bigger problem with Norma. How about Norma's against slave labor? So they get her out of working for Teal Holtzman, and then
she uses
instead
more
of leaving, she builds a new factory with slaves. She takes no interest in these slaves. Like, you're so goddamn concerned about slave labor, and then you don't, like, I don't know, collect all the families of the slaves, which, FYI, and I know Nate knows this, and most of the listeners do, too.
Yeah.
There were slaveholders in the Old South that collected slave families at their plantations to make them run smoothly. Like, this is a known phenomenon in slaveholding societies. So, if you are a slaveholder, like Norma was, and you wanted to run smoothly, you would actively try to get their families there so that you would have a pliant workforce, right? Like, that is a tactic that is used and has been used forever.
For sure.
And it makes all the sense in the world.
Well, of course.
Especially when you're doing difficult work where you need people to want to do the job. You make them happy. That's why we have benefits and everything else. Like,
wait, what are you saying?
If you have, the more difficult and shitty your job is, usually the more benefits you have to make you more pliant and likely to do it correctly, right?
Well, and Aurelius Venport knew this because he was giving hazard pay for the pilots of the Fold spaceships.
Oh, right. Like, they show signs of being aware. Yeah. Like,
but of course,
they're showing.
They make Norma, I mean, she's super awkward and she doesn't understand the politics. And she mentions that a lot of times in some of her chapters where she's like, I just never understood how evil like Teal was and like all the politics and stuff like that. And I think, like, in the grand scheme of this book, I think the only people that I've really enjoyed are Norma and probably Vor. Everyone else is kind of an asshole. Even Serena, to some extent. I mean, she had a terrible tragedy befall her and a pig carcass romance session go wrong. But, you know, in the grand scheme, I think, like, Norma is probably my favorite character of this whole series so far.
Oh, Norma and Vori and Atreides are definitely the two sympathetic characters.
Yeah.
And not coincidentally, they make, I mean, the Atreides are obviously the protagonists of this series, so they're not going to have him be a baddie. And Norma, Norma makes a comeback, so.
Yes, she does.
Not surprising at all.
So during the slave revolt, Alid, the angry one, right, somehow knew that the archaic weapons in the museum were functional. That seemed like a gigantic logical leap. Like, museums in America, in modern times, render every weapon on their display inoperable. They don't put functional weapons on display. Like, you can't give them a functional weapon to display.
No, they remove at least one mechanical part that makes it so that it can't be functional.
So why would a lead
in a separate place?
Yeah, like, why would a lead think, like, oh yeah, all of these archaic weapons are functional. I know they are. How? You're a fucking slave. How would you? You've never been to the museum, I'll bet you. They don't take, like, slave field trips. Oh, you did some real good calculations and you only misplaced 2 decimal points this whole week. Let's go to the museum and I'll get you a juice box on the way there. Like, what? That's some bullshit.
Dude, I'll go one more. Okay. Why are these slaves getting moved around with no, like, trade specification?
Rhyme or reason?
At all. Yeah. Like, you had a bunch of construction guys out in space, and then you put them on the fucking mathematics team? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Like, they're constructing stuff out in space.
Hey, debate team is next. They want well-rounded slaves here, Mike.
Right. Like, they're specialists. They can build stuff in zero grav.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Why would you have them doing math by pencil and paper?
Yeah. Like, and then bring them to the museum for funsies.
Yeah. Like, you don't go from being a doctor to being a aerospace engineer. Right.
Yeah. Well, and they shouldn't be, these slaves shouldn't even know there's such a thing as a museum. Like, if you're doing it, I don't want to say, like, if you're doing slavery right, but kind of. Like, they're not supposed to know about the museum, probably. They're not supposed to be able to read. You know, they're supposed to not be aware of a lot of stuff.
Not all of them. Not all of them. So, if you have a problem slave, you make that slave not alive anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
you
don't have,
you put him on the old Minecraft farm.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. What happened to slave Bobby? He went to the Minecraft farm where all the slaves are happy. And
He joined Benjamin in the field. He pulled lots of heavy loads.
yes. And the corn's going to be extra fertilized this year. Happy for that. Okay, so they're talking about, like, the ancient Lascun. And so I put, you mean the same Lascuns everyone 10,000 years in the future uses? Like, everybody's using Lascuns in the future. So it's ancient 10,000 years in the past. It's already ancient. And then people are using Laskans in the main Dune timeline. It doesn't make any sense. I did have a question, and I should ask Norma this. So the Fold spaceship could travel through Fold space without ever taking off, right from the floor of the hangar, which it did. It literally did. And I suppose it wouldn't matter. And that's probably more of like a sci-fi hangover from all the other sci-fi films I've seen, right? Like, you can't warp off of the planet. You need to be in space to warp. But the Fold space, I mean, it makes sense. It can fold space anywhere it is. It doesn't have to be in space. It could be on the floor. It could be on the ground.
It doesn't have to be in space. And in the main Dune timeline, the ships are so massive
that they can't land. Yeah,
they don't go into orbit. They don't go onto the planet because they're too physically large.
Yes, yes.
That's the idea.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then my next quote was, at least Tio got what was coming to him, because that was when Alid fired the last gun at Tio's personal shield generator, which we all know creates an atomic blast.
Obviously, only a slave would know that.
Yes. Well, and Tio didn't know that. Norma tried to tell him, and he was like, Norma, you're a fucking weirdo. Get the fuck away from me.
Well, I thought that the Tio Holtzman blood timeline was appropriate, because that is a common phenomenon. The people whose hubris blinds them to the truth.
Oh, yes. Because, and I like that. Yeah. And that's why I put in my notes, like, at least Tio got what was coming to him. I wish he would have had more realization before it happened to him, but he had a bit of realization, I think, in the book. So
far, Nate, it sounds like you like this book more than I do.
Well, we're going to get into that because I've still got notes left. Okay. Vor went and he put a little bit of malware in the Omnius update that Surratt is flying around delivering. Because that's what he used to do with Surratt, is they deliver the update spheres. Vor is worried about the date of Surratt after after he delivered the corrupted updates, claiming that if Omnius destroyed Surratt, it would be grossly inefficient, but a waste of resources, because Vor cares about Surratt.
And Surratt cares about Vorian,
yes,
as we find out.
As we find out later. But I don't think Omnius really gives a shit about one courier droid, because several times in the book, Omnius is like, well, I can just make more droids, or I can make more machines, or whatever. So I don't know that it's really, like, a huge thing, so it's kind of strange to me that they would even let Surratt keep functioning after he did that. He delivered, like, this corrupted update sphere to I don't know how many planets, and shut down, like, five or six planets.
You also
have
to remember that he mind-melded with Omnius. No, Erasmus,
yeah.
And Erasmus cleared him of any guilt.
Yeah.
So that's why they let him continue, because he wasn't aware of what he was doing.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, still, well, and Surratt was, like, hiding things from Erasmus and stuff. So, I feel like, you know, Omnius is like, yeah, I can make as many fucking update droids or courier droids as I want. Like, why would they give a shit? They'd be like, oh, you did something bad. Even if it's not your fault, like, who gives a fuck? Like, out of commission, give me a new one.
Well, that's how we would do it.
Like we said, that's like, probably how, yeah. The machines should be hyper-logical and not really give two fucks about Surratt, because they're all machines, and they're supposed to, or Omnius at least, is supposed to go for the most, like, logical course of action every time. But if he did, there'd be no humans, because he would have just eradicated them all, and, you know, so I guess you have to have a story, right? And that's the route they went to go. All right, so talking about the time it costs to travel around before the Fold spaceships, Vor has time to fly around in space. He's just fucking flying around, trying to find Surratt, while pondering his feelings of love for Laronica. So with all the bullshit that the humans end up doing in the book, couldn't the machines just, like, overwhelm them and just keep going and going? And this is, like, you know, hopefully the last time I'm going to mention this. But, like, if they just sent everything they had, it would only take however many days to completely overwhelm the humans, because humans need sleep and food and water. And there's no, God damn it. I wish I had the word in my head. I know exactly what I'm trying to say. When you cut off a city from supplies.
Siege.
Yeah. They do that? Yeah. Yeah.
You would think
the machines do that.
Here's a huge plot hole. When they have these big meetings where they're whipping everybody up and they have, like, every major character all in one place.
Yeah, all in the one building.
Siege them up. Like, Poratrin, which apparently is producing all this technology. They meet a fake fleet. Well, why don't they just put them under siege and prevent anything from coming and going?
Yeah.
This is their headquarters of technology. Just shut them off.
Yeah.
Shut them off from everything from the outside and slowly chip away, because you have all these machines Add resources in. Shut them off, enclose them, add resources in.
Yep.
Just like Caesar back in the day, right? Oh, yeah. Like, build a wall around the wall.
Yep.
It's pretty basic tactic.
I know. And it's,
I mean, I'm aware of it, and I'm a loser electrician from northern Minnesota.
And you've never commanded a battle fleet, so.
No, I've never committed a war crime, for sure.
Hey, you know what? If you have a flamethrower, it's pretty hard to enforce the Geneva Conventions when you're on fire.
Funny you say that. That is foreshadowing to one of our future episodes.
And to the end, or the AI end. Serena Butler. All right, so Chirox, I don't know, the training robot, he doesn't need rest. They have a whole chapter on how he doesn't need rest, and he can just train people day and night, day and night, day and night. So if he doesn't need rest, why would Omnius's forces need rest? Which goes back to, like, just send everything at them. Why are you preparing morning anything? Send everything at them. And then there's a really weird and awkward, like, Erasmus sex ed chapter with Gilbertus. Like, I was not a fan of that. Do you remember that one, Mike?
Dude, it's really weird. I think that they fell into the trap of having sexy time in novels, which was pretty popular at the time.
In 2003, they
made an overture. Yeah, in 2003. You know, this is like the end of the male novel and the beginning of reign of the romance novel, right?
Sure, yep.
That's the only thing I can think of, like, bring this into, like, the world of reality, right?
Like, well, and I mean, I understand, stuff. Like, they're trying to show Erasmus is trying to, like, learn more and teach more and whatever. And, like, at the end of the book, he finally says that Gilbertus is his son, even though, you know, Erasmus has been battling his own feelings for Gilbertus the entire book. But it was done in kind of a way where it's hard to believe either of these two men have children, which I know they do. And it's kind of the same with the first book, where I was like, the birthing chapter was written as if neither of these two people have ever consulted a woman about birth ever in their lives. So I guess they're staying true to form from the first book, where they have like one chapter where you're like, you guys have had the sex. You've done the sex. You've mated with someone, but apparently not.
Right. I think this is like a hangover from, who the hell am I thinking of? I'm going to look it up right now.
All right. Look it up.
And we have Wikipedia can show. This is all going to be
covered. So for the Nice Ashes drinking game, anytime Mike mentions bowling, you take a shot. Anytime Mike looks something up, you take a shot. Anytime Mike references looking something up and calling it Google the show or Wikipedia the show, you take a shot. Anytime we mention Keith, you take two shots. Or one listener, you take three shots.
There we go. I think that the sex stuff is related to Game of Thrones, which was gaining popularity in the novel form, which is like their main competitor in the marketplace of that era. And that is, like, I haven't read it, but from what I've been told is partially pornographic. I don't know if that's true or not.
It's true.
I'm just reporting what I've been told.
I've read the first 2.5 books before I was like, this is stupid. But it's only stupid because everybody you read in the first like chapter dies by the 8th chapter. And then by the 3rd book, there's all these new people. And I was just kind of like, I don't care enough. I don't need to be learning new people. Give me one person, but let me follow.
Every work of fiction is a product of its time. And their main competitor is going to be something as epic as Game of Thrones, because this book was 7th on the New York Times bestseller list. So,
I'm not saying anything like that. I enjoyed the book. I'm just saying I'm, you know, critically looking at it because the first book was not good.
Not what you wanted it to be, which was Dune.
Which is the title.
One of the greatest books of all time.
The Beleriand Jihad. Well, don't put Dune so big on the cover if you're not going to write it like Dune.
Right. I mean, well, again, they're writing on the shoulders of giants, all that. Yeah,
I get it. And they did a decent job with the last 3 books of the main series or whatever it was, so I can't fault them necessarily for wanting to do their own thing, or maybe they had a bit scraps here and there of notes for these ones. I don't know. So my next note is 570 pages in the edition I was reading, and there's another jump ahead in time. So now it's suddenly 36 years of jihad going on. And sometimes they leap years within chapters, And so like a chapter is like, okay, so it's been a year and everybody's a year older. And then sometimes they do like a big title page and it's just jumped a year in the future. And it's not really that consistent. So it was kind of a little confusing to me because the time jumps in this trilogy so far have been kind of very disorienting. And
yeah, it's not like Frank Herbert where it's like, concise story at this point in time.
Well, and even like...
concise story at this time. And then...
Yeah, but I mean, even in like Dune, it was 8 years. Paul spent 8 years, but it was like one chapter. But it was like, you know, oh yeah, my son's 8 years old now. And then he was fucking murdered by the whatever, right? Like, but he did
the evil Harkonnens.
Yeah, in an organic way. It was an organic time jump. It wasn't like a big title page. Sometimes, and sometimes just like a sentence in a chapter. So they weren't very consistent with it. My next thing is I was not a fan at all of Serena forcing her way into Aurelius Venport and Norma Serva's, or Norma Venport. I don't know if she took his last name, but they married. She changed her whole body and everything, and she unlocked her potential when she was being tortured by one of the Titans.
Xerxes.
And was able to basically lobotomize him with her energy. Or kill him. You wiped him out. It was the other one. Oh, yeah. It was the one that Hecate was firing upon that was lobotomized, kind of. But she took out Xerxes, and she rebuilt her body and unlocked the full potential of the...
Her bloodline, whatever it was.
Well, yeah, but the fucking Bene Gesserit.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah, coincidentally, the witches
somehow,
of Rossat
everything just happened. Everything crazily. Just happened right here in this book. With everybody you ever thought you could hope. But yeah, I didn't like Serena doing the eminent domain on Venport's fold spaceships.
No.
Okay. And then Aurelius Venport is supposedly whose biggest fan and biggest supporter?
Norma Semba.
Yeah. And Aurelius is calling them Holtzman engines, but Holtzman didn't invent them. He put forth a formula that Norma extrapolated to do this thing. So wouldn't they be Senva engines or Norma engines?
You would think so. It's almost like they were called Holtzman engines, and then they shoehorned in a different story after the fact.
Weird. I wouldn't have thought that would have happened. I was kind of hoping that instead of just like this lazy, and you've said this, not me, but this is my first time calling the writing lazy, that because they were called Holtzman engines in the original Dune series, that they're just casually making Aurelius call them Holtzman engines here so they don't have to worry about it. But I thought they were going to do something where it was like Holtzman or Blood or Lord Blood or was suddenly somehow survived the blast on Porotrin and claimed something, right? Because Aurelius negotiated this huge fucking patent deal with them, and they were going to come back and say, well, you know, either give us a percentage of the stuff, or you have to call them Holtzman engines, and then have like one last like little fucking like fuck you, right, from Holtzman. And but no, it's just randomly Aurelius calling them Holtzman engines instead of Norma engines, right? I was a little disappointed in that. And I guess the next one is like Laronica, after she found out she was pregnant by Vor, married like this guy that was, I guess, infatuated with her on Caladan. But he was always a bit character. Like, they didn't ever really devote any time to him, and then he fucking dies. I mean, he did like a good job. Like, he sounded like a nice guy. They didn't really devote any time to him, and he just fucking dies. So it's kind of like one of those things where why does he even have to exist? Other than we need a 700-page book, I guess.
Oh, the Vorian Atreides storyline is ridiculous in that manner. Like,
yeah,
you're a very important man. You can protect your family if you want to have one. It's not necessary for all this extra bullshit.
Yeah.
At all.
Pretending to be somebody named Verk. I'm just a common worker named Verk, but I speak and act and talk like I'm actually running this jihad, which I also kind of am.
Yeah, I'm here to build this massive military base, and just magically I can go to the town next door, and nobody knows who I am, even though
I am literally bang whoever I want.
Yeah, I am the lord of this planet, and nobody knows it somehow magically, even though I'm running the whole workforce that's doing everything here. Like, I'm running everything here, but you don't know who I am, somehow.
Yes. My face is not everywhere all the time, because we don't have machines, so you never see me. We don't have television. We have spy satellites, like, of course, but, you know, I'm an enigma.
Yeah. I'm the town next door to the military base, but none of my subordinates ever
None of the people are saluting me here in this seedy-ass place where I see several of them here. You guys should be at work, by the way. I don't know why. I'm just a lowly person. You guys need to be at work.
Leave now.
Yes. Yes. All right. And I thought this was ridiculous. This was like the stupidest fucking part of the whole book. Possibly. Other than Omnius not just launching an onslaught. The Cogitors go to Omnius for some reason. And they tell him, hey, everyone should just stop fighting. Even though Omnius has been like, hey, maybe we should stop fighting and go to places where humans can't live. Oh, next chapter is happening. Let's keep fighting the humans. Now the Cogitors are here and they're telling Omnius, hey, you know what would save a lot of like robot lives and human lives? Just stop fighting. And instead of like boiling them in their preservation canisters, Omnius is like, that sounds good to me. Just get the humans to agree. Isn't that fucking stupid? That's fucking stupid. It's dumb. Dude, they're supposed to be like, they're supposed to be like the most smart things because they've had thousands of years to ruminate in their own juices. And the best thing they can come up with is like, you know, nobody would die if nobody fought. Yeah, you fucking think? Nobody would starve if they just all had food. Right? Maybe I'm a cogitor. I don't know. Okay. And this next part, I literally almost threw the book across the room. I almost threw the book across the room. This was the worst part of this book by far. 1000% the worst part of this book. Are you ready for it?
I'm ready.
Okay. Octa. Octa serves bristleback loin chops and gives Xavier a knowing smile about the fucking pig hunt decades ago when he fucked her sister and got her pregnant. With the fucking Pumbaa the Pig fucking session that I hated from the first book. They're making a callback to that. Octa's serving bristleback and giving a knowing smile to Xavier. Hey, you fucked my sister and impregnated her when you guys fucked by this dead corpse of this same animal. The fuck?
Dude, that whole relationship is fucking weird.
The whole thing is fucking not normal. I know. Nah, and I'm like, that was normal. The cringiest part of the first book by far. And you guys are making a goddamn callback to it now. And I have to think about, one, the goddamn we're going to fuck by a dead pig scene that was cringy in the first book. Then I have to also think about him deciding to marry like the 16-year-old sister. And then, like, we're doing all this right now again.
Right. It's, again, I think they were trying to compete against the George R.R. Martin universe. They had to have some sexy time.
Well, you gotta have sure. sexy time. But as we find out, this was the last meal they ever shared together. And then, so the next sentence I wrote was, fuck, they're killing everyone at the end of this book. Because fucking, well, Salim died like in the middle of the book, the Worm Rider, or the very beginning, or somewhere in there. And then Serena dies because she goes to try and piss off Omnius because that's what Iblis told her to do. And then she ends up not dying by Omnius, but by her own guards because they were instructed to fucking kill her anyway. And then it turns out Iblis grew a gola of Serena. And they filmed a bunch of like weird torture porn with her to release to everybody. But that's okay. You can do that, but you can't let Norma have a goddamn calculator.
Well, yeah, and these people are not aware of misinformation. Nobody knows about misinformation. Nobody knows about deepfakes and AI in this world of intelligent machines. Are you fucking joking me?
Yeah.
Do the slaves know about the museums and everybody's so goddamn smart that you can go from being heavy machine operators in space to being human calculators because that's how smart everybody is and you don't know about...
Well, and the funny thing is they're talking about Serena's cage at the end and they're like, it looked like the Butler estate and it looked like this and it looked like all these places that the machines never should have known about, which they were trying to imply that there's a lot of human conspirators with the machines, which is fine, but the machines have this capability to make fake imagery real. And like you said, nobody's aware of deepfakes. Nobody's aware of what the machines can do. Like, goddamn, if the machines can do that and the machines don't need rest, fucking launch an onslaught and send them a bunch of weird propaganda videos or like what we had to watch in the early 2000s, right? The Gary the Unicorn thing and the orange thing, the orange face guy thing. Like, fuck. Like, send them that and they won't sleep ever. They'll be traumatized for life. Holy shit.
I will say that I am officially done with my cigar.
Okay, mate. I'm almost done. I have one last sentence here. Yep. Oh, and so like Ishmael, they end up fold spacing. They're the first people in the history of the Dune universe to ever fold space. And they go to Arrakis because the Talaxu slave trader, that was the only coordinates he could remember. Yes. And they go there, and he ends up kind of getting buddy-buddy with Salim Wormrider's widow, and he has some visions and saves Salim's son from scorpions, I guess, which I don't think are mentioned anywhere ever else again in Dune, so they must have perished in some kind of mass extinction. But he says that they will call themselves the Free Men, Fremen of Arrakis, which was almost but not quite as bad as the Bristleback love scene.
Dude, they're both pretty bad, not going to lie. It was totally right? John Carter of Mars saying, oh, he was a black man, but as a Virginian, he was the most beautiful black man I've ever seen. Like, fuck off.
Like, what does that even mean?
What the fuck is going on right now?
What are you talking about? Jesus.
What are we doing here?
So we didn't mention this, and I'm just about done with a cigar, but Mike's done, so we're going to be done real soon, everybody. If you haven't read this episode probably doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But Xavier ends up finding out that the Talaxu farms are not really so much farms in the sense as they are kidnapping people and harvesting their organs and just finding a blood donor match.
Which is no surprise to anyone.
No surprise to anyone.
And everyone knew.
Not everyone. Everyone knew. Iblis knew for sure. Serena didn't want to know, which means she probably guessed but claimed ignorance. But Xavier ended up dying by flying him and Iblis into a sun. So really the only people we have going into the third book of this trilogy is Vor and Norma, because Aurelius and Norma's mother, Zufa, ended up dying and taking out Hecate, who I think was trying to help them, but she had other plans too. So maybe it was a good thing. Maybe it was a bad thing. Nobody really knows. The book doesn't really give a shit if you know one way or the other. And there's not that many people left. And Jewel ended up dying by being crushed by a gigantic wave because Hecate's asteroid ship crashed into the ocean and made everybody so wet they had to die. But Shiro, or Shirox, the training droid, is still alive, and he's going to keep training people when they finally come back, I guess, to their archipelago. And that's kind of where things are at, I guess. Is that an accurate summation of kind of the end of the book? Everybody fucking dies except Norma, Vorian, Laronica is still alive, and her kids.
Yeah, Shirox is still alive.
Yeah,
a couple of the Titans are still alive.
Yep, and they're doing a full on. They're fighting Omnius now. So Omnius is fighting the humans and the Titans. The humans are fighting Omnius, the Titans, and internal spies, I guess.
Yeah. FYI, the Titans' turning makes no sense. They have no industrial base.
Yeah.
What the fuck are they going to do? There's no industrial base.
Well, they captured that planet, and they're like, oh, we've got plenty of people we're converting.
A single planet in 1,000?
Like, I don't know, man.
What?
Like, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Or it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But this book was better than the first one, in my opinion. First one was kind of rubbish. Could have been way shorter. And this one could have been way shorter, too, because it was about page 400 out of 760 pages or 70 pages that I was kind of like, oh, I'm getting into this. But that's like a book and 3/4 of a trilogy. So right. It's like halfway into the trilogy, I'm finally starting to get into it. And it's like, you could have abridged a lot of this stuff. And it could be a 2-book thing.
Well, they tried to do the detail of Frank Herbert, but I mean,
it kind of got lost in the writing, I guess, right? Like, we have to kind of flush everybody out before we kill them right before the last book. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I mean, Ishmael's still alive, and Salim's wife is still alive, Mara, and his son. Ishmael has the prescient visions from spice, or massive doses of spice. Norma's starting to, because she actually built navigational thinking machines to help, because the full space ships are super dangerous at this point. And she took some spice to try and calm herself down, and she saw like everything. So that's, she's, of course, not only is she going to spawn the Bene Gesserit, but she's going to spawn the Guild Navigators as well. And it just seems kind of like overly predictable in a sense. I was surprised they killed everybody off, because they kind of promised like the feud between the Harkonnens and the Atreides. But Xavier's last note to Vor was, let everybody know the Talaxu are literally just capturing and killing people. And I think Vor said something like, well, nobody needs to know this because the jihad has to continue or something. So I don't know if that's going to be the issue that drives the wedge. Maybe they're going to make a Gola of Xavier or something, because they made a duplicate of Serena. I mean, who knows what's going to happen, but it seems, I mean, who knows the specifics, but it seems like it's fairly kind of predictable, which is kind of a shame.
Yes.
But I haven't read the last one
yet. I think
yet,
that
we're going to do it on the show.
Synopsis of this book, and I'm going to give the synopsis, and this will be definitive, is that if you are a reader and you want to read really good sci-fi, read Dune, Messiah, Children of Dune, go to God Emperor. If you like God Emperor, read Heretics and Chapter House, and then go forward at your own peril, because I like all the Dune books. I've read them all, but it is pulp sci-fi after the original five. For sure, it is pulp sci-fi. And entertaining, yes, but it doesn't really make sense at a certain point.
Well, God Emperor of Dune, and after I read the full main timeline, God Emperor of Dune is the pivotal book in the series. If you can get behind God Emperor of Dune, and that was my favorite book of the whole series, honestly. If you can get behind
God Emperor of Dune made me mad multiple times. I was like enraged. And it's like, well, that means that it's a good story.
It's
like,
so good.
Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yes. But if you can get behind that, you should finish out the main timeline for sure. Because I even liked Hunters of Dune and Sandworms of Dune, which were the two written by Brian and Kevin. It rounded out the story. It set the stage for stuff that if you hadn't read this prequel trilogy, you would have no idea who like Norma is, because she shows up at the end of that. And you'd have no idea, but then you go and read these and everything's a little too neat and everybody's there at the same time. And like Aurelius Venport in this book turned into something he wasn't in the first book, right? Like he was like nervous about trying to negotiate with Serena about, oh, you took over my spaceship yards, but I want profits off of it. But now you gave me an award and I feel like patriotic for the first time in my life, but I also want profits. But I also kind of like my wife, but I'm referring to her invention as Holtzman engines. And, you know, it was just kind of like a weird way to sign off Aurelius Venport, I guess. It felt a little dishonest to his character. But I'm not Brian or Kevin. I don't know. Final thoughts on the cigar, Mike?
I really like the spice.
Oh, it was spicy all the way through it.
All the way through. It did not get sour. It didn't get overwhelming. I thought the spice tamed by the end, but it still had that like spicy.
It was still spicy at the end.
Flavor. Yeah, it was still spicy at the end. It just tamed down to where it didn't get overwhelming. It was very pleasant throughout.
Yes.
I think there it's a great cigar.
There wasn't a flavor change or anything.
No, there wasn't. But
it was spicy throughout. The spice dissipated a little bit. But it, you know, the last puffs I've taken just now were still spicy at the end of the cigar, and usually it kind of like the spice leaves by the middle of the stick. So this one, I like this one.
Oh, I think it's good. I put 4.25. I think I might amend it to do a 4.5.
Yeah, I was thinking 4.5 in my head.
Yeah.
So
I was looking at the other cigars now that we have reference points.
Yes.
But all the same, like I think it's a good cigar. I recommend.
Oh yeah.
If you see one of these project series by Alec Bradley on the shelf, buy it. It's worth a try. I'll be buying them. If I see one of these, I'm getting it for sure. I'm excited for future output, and hopefully we try them on the show.
So. Yeah, hopefully so. I thought you said this whole season was going to be bad cigars, Mike.
Are
you doing throwing a good one in?
That hell week is about to begin, my friend.
Damn. Well, tune in next week, I guess, right?
Yeah, next week is
Tatiana
Waking Dream, I believe, is what we're smoking next.
Okay. Do they have a fever dream? Because I might be entering it.
It is very long and very skinny. I don't know. And it smells like cough syrup.
Yep. So, well, NyQuil the show next week.
No. So.
Anyway, Dune, Machine Crusade, better than Dune, Butler, and Jihad. I still feel this could have been condensed into one book, especially with all the time jumps, which were, I don't know, they weren't handled in a organic way that I would have liked, but whatever.
It was definitely not as clean as it should have been, and I can tell you that the future, like, 12 novels they put out, they clean it up, obviously.
Sure, getting, yeah.
They got better.
Yeah.
It's very much a pulp sci-fi writing on the coattails of Dune.
Yeah.
For sure.
Which, you know, had I been aware of that, which is weird because I read, you know, the original, all of them in the main timeline, which two of them were done by Brian and Kevin. And but I guess it was more or less collating notes and filling in a couple gaps here and there, from what I gather. I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong. And then to go to And to go to this, where it's kind of a drastic shift of tone and trying to write as if in the style of, you know, because they have the little quotes, you know, at the top of the chapters, like Frank did in the original Dune, where it's like Princess Aurel and notes on the this or on the that and other, you know, sayings and things like that. And I noticed in this one they did two chapter headings where it was Xavier's last note to Vor. But they did that twice. So was it the same note? I guess. I don't know. Were there two different notes? Which one was the last note? I don't know. Just not a whole lot of consistency in terms of the time jumps, because some of them were happening in the chapter, some of them happened in like section breaks, I guess you would say. I guess I just wanted a little bit more out of it, which might be my fault for going into it with those expectations. But this one I liked better than the Butler and Jihad. But unfortunately, I guess you have to kind of read the Butler and Jihad to understand anything that's going on in this one. But stay tuned, because we will do the Battle for Corrin, which is the last book in the prequel trilogy. Otherwise, check out the Alec Bradley Project 40 Robusto. Really good smoke. And thanks for listening.
Be safe. Have fun. We'll be right back.